Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this. Talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
This altar, did I not mention? He's a goddamn electro freak.
Help!
Those were the cries of help from Joe Scrabbles. What's wrong, Joe?
I'm a goddamn electro freak.
That's what's wrong.
I'd almost forgotten about him. We'll get onto him shortly, but yeah. I'm not a goddamn electro freak. My name is Simon Cardy. I'm here with Matt Perslow.
Hello.
Are you not a goddamn electro freak?
I'm not really known for sparky, am I? I'm more subdued than that.
Are you?
I thought you meant as in, like, you're not an electrician.
I'm not that either.
More of a plasterer, mate.
That just reminds me of this is a real obscure reference for anyone who's watched the Owlman videos on YouTube, but There's a very funny clip of a Scottish man just shouting, "I'm just an electrician.
I'm just an electrician."
I find it very funny.
That's very good.
But yeah, like I said, that is of relevance to no one. Do you know what should be of relevance to a lot of people, though? Is the demo for Outriders, which I'm going to put out there.
It's a very bold claim.
It should be of relevance. I'm telling people, it's a free demo. Try this game out, because I'll tell you, for one, I was ready to give it a miss. Mm. I played it for a bit with you two lovely gentlemen, And I'm very pleasantly surprised.
Me
this
too.
Is a very fun game.
Yeah, it's... I'm not sure whether they were planning a demo like this before, but they announced it when they announced a delay to the game. And if it wasn't planned before, it's like they've accidentally stumbled on the best possible marketing for their game, because we wrote about this yesterday. Like, the demo's huge. It's like 3 hours long and replayable, and leads into the main game. So it's just the entire opening act of the game, with a main mission, a boss fight, 4 side missions, loot farming, like shops to improve, levels to go up. Like, it gives you the whole looter shooter experience. And the result is like a really good introduction to this quite, like, generic looking but actually interesting playing looter shooter.
Yeah.
It's a cool thing.
I think that's the key. Like, and the demo is free to play, so I would, again, encourage people to do it. And yeah, all your progress carries over. You won't have to do those missions again in the main game. It's just a really smart way of doing it. Like you said, I think they've stumbled across it. And yeah, I think the reasons I was pleasantly surprised is because I looked at it originally, I was like, okay, this looks pretty generic in style to me. Like, it looks like kind of a Gears of War with a little bit of, like, a sprinkle of Mass Effect and a looter shooter vibe thrown in. But then it actually just, I think the bit that surprised me most is it all just runs. Like, I had one or two little crashes and glitches last night, but I think I'm just comparing it to Square Enix's last looter shooter outing, which is Avengers, which, you know, we've spoken enough about, but that game has its faults.
I think,
whereas this one just runs really well.
We're all playing on PS5. I do think people have run into problems on other formats, so we might be being lucky. And we have, to be fair, had quite a lot of crashes, considering it's a, you know, showing off a game. But the core of it, Matt's spoken about it before, I think even on the podcast, but the thing that sold me originally on the concept was Matt's previews about, like, the ability uses in this game and how it builds on, like, your general sort of Mowbray hero-y, cooldown-y ability usage. But the speed at which Outriders gives you weird, cool shit to do is the selling point for me, because it is just, it feels like a, you know, you can tell it's the company that made Gears of War Judgment. Like, they have pedigree here. They like this kind of thing. But they've thrown in these magic powers that, like, an hour into this game, my character has discovered he's a superhuman and can now turn into a bunch of floating rocks and fly at people anywhere on the map.
He's really taken that in his stride.
He has. He's not bothered at all by the fact that he's becoming just some rocks quite a lot. And that's what I'm really into, is this idea that it's just like immediately giving you fun things, like fun thought experiments to play with in terms of its abilities. It's really cool.
It's not one of those games where kind of like your first ability is you can heal. And now you've got something that buffs your damage by 0.5% for, you know, 20 seconds. Like, for example, I think Cardi is probably him playing the Trickster, which is a time manipulation, close combat character. Probably
it's very much
has.
Like me.
Yes, yeah, oh, absolutely, down to
a minute in my company seems like an hour.
But kind of like the shit that it gives you to do that is very useful for the team to use as well. But the fact that you can create a time bubble, which anything that gets caught in it is slowed down, but it also like shreds their skin from their skeletons.
Mm.
And then I have an ability that can turn those skeletons into a bomb and then they explode. And so it's like you get all of that within about an hour and a half of play. Like it doesn't mess around with how quickly it not only just gives you things that are very useful and have synergy with all the other characters, but also looks like the stuff that you would get endgame in so many other games.
I think, and
that's what I love,
I think that's what's really interesting about the farming loop as well. Like, you know, lots of looter shooters, for better and worse, are about, like, gradual, incremental increases in power. And, like, can I build someone who's got lots of health and defense? Whereas this, you know, it's got the usual tiers of weaponry, but the blue tier, so what, rare as opposed to uncommon and common, in this, immediately starts giving you stuff that, like, fundamentally changes how your powers work. So it's not waiting for the one legendary you get every 3 hours of play. It's, like, every new rare weapon you get, which is, you know, 1 in 10, can make a complete difference to how you play. Like, I now have some boots that completely change how one of my core powers functions. Like, usually it's I can hold up a shield and it catches bullets and then I can throw them back. But with these boots on, that are just a thing I found in a box, that now just turns on a shield around me that does it automatically while I fight, but I get a penalty for the damage it does. And you're like, that's a huge difference. Like, that changes how I play. And the fact that it's doing that this quickly is really cool.
Those boots are made for shielding, and that's just what they'll do. Oh,
is that what you were trying to interrupt me constantly for?
No, that was the joke you wanted to make. I had a genuine point, and then that stupid one overtook it in my mind.
Oh, no.
But I was going to say, I am one of the lucky ones among us to have found a legendary item.
Yeah, all right.
I got a lucky drop last night. You'll get yours, but that's what we were
You'll
about,
get right? yours, son.
You'll get yours, don't worry. Like, all the guns are guns you'll typically see in games. You've got SMGs, shotguns, assault rifles, snipers. But then these legendary guns are just mad weapons. They are types of guns like LMGs or shotguns, but they're just, like, made out of carcasses rather than metal.
They look like an H.R. Giger demon's penis, most of them. Like, they're just horrible rib cages and flesh and glowing pustules
and stuff. That's what mine is. I'm looking at it now. It is just, it looks like, yeah, like half a amphibious dinosaur skeleton. It's called Grim Marrow, and it makes black holes. It's got level 2 improved stiffening.
Oh,
so, there we go.
Mother, may I?
my character Keith the Trickster is enjoying that very much.
Yeah,
it also creates a singularity, which I haven't quite worked out what I'm doing with that yet.
Isn't it that you can basically, when you shoot certain people, they get pulled out of cover and just float around?
This is what it says here is killing shots create an anomaly singularity. When destroyed, the singularity explodes, dealing 458 damage to enemies within a 6.5-meter radius.
I feel like we've just taken massive steps back in selling this game to people.
Nah, that sounds cool to me. And if you don't like the sound of that, then, whoa, I mean, why are you?
Yeah, what's the fucking point?
But yeah, I think that's also, you can see, obviously, you've said before, the Gears of War influence is heavy on this. Like, it's a cover-based shooter kind of at its core, but you don't have to play it like that at all.
It doesn't like want you to.
No. Like, it gives you, you know, when you're in a fight, because you'll see about 56 pieces of cover in an arena.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, my character is all about getting close, and I gain health back when I kill people close up. So, I don't really play and use the cover, or maybe I should, because we are maybe dying slightly too often. But, you know, it's all about...
We are.
And that's the thing. It's just fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're on the highest difficulty that that demo offers, I think, which is like...
Yeah.
It has what's called the world tier system, which is the longer you can go without dying, it will increase kind of like the difficulty of the game. And that will mm-hmm. provide like a higher chance to get legendaries and a higher chance to get that better loot. And we are on the cap out of that, which is world tier 5, I think, caps mm-hmm. out on the demo. But I think the entire game caps out at like level 15. So it can get quite wild. But yeah, it's kind of like the way that the game feels structured to me is a little bit out of Doom's playbook, in that kind of like you'll go down a series of kind of interconnecting corridors, for lack of a better term. It's outside, so it's not like a spaceship corridor or anything. But then you'll get to what, like you say, Cardi, you see all the cover and it's clearly an arena. And then that will be full of different types of enemies, and kind of like you'll have snipers and very, very tough kind of like spongy enemies and stuff like that. And yeah, it's kind of that finding a way to synergize the three of you and your three different abilities together to kind of micromanage to a degree, kind of like where the enemies are and sort of like knowing, predicting sort of like where you need to put your priorities, because quite often, like certainly for me, snipers are a problem because my character can't teleport like yours can, which means that you can get behind snipers and stab them in the back, whereas so I can't do that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I like that. It feels like
you've got fire coming out your hands.
Yeah, yeah, I can burn things quite effectively. But yeah, it does feel like those arenas are designed to be played in kind of like a trio and sort of bring all of your three different things. Don't know quite how well this might work as a solo experience.
Mm. Yeah. I haven't tried it yet by myself, apart from the prologue, which you have to play by yourself. I imagine it is less fun, but I find that the same with all these games. Yeah. Like, every loot shooter is more fun when you're playing with friends, I think. And this one is kind of the most refreshing I've played recently, just in terms of combat. I will say, couldn't care less about the story. It's a very, in my eyes, a very generic humans go to a new planet, destroy and, it sort of story.
Yeah. And it is built much more like Gears of War campaign than other games in this genre are. Like, Destiny is a little bit more free-flowing than that. It's kind of like, in Destiny, there's planets with a bunch of activities on it, and you sort of, like, bumble around them, whereas this is closer to a Gears of War or a Mass Effect. There's a very sort of linear path through the game.
I think it looks like Destiny, and it's... So I think people think it's a game of service, but I think it's way easier to think about this like Borderlands. Like,
yeah.
It's mm-hmm. it is a campaign you're playing through with stuff to do along the way. It just happens to be multiplayer.
Yeah.
I think they've said, like, we're not doing game of service, we're not adding events. The game that comes out is the game you'll have until we make expansions for it. So, you know, if you're tired of the, you know, I have to put in 60 hours just to get to a thing that they, you know, might add later, that's not going to happen. So
no.
that's quite refreshing as well.
I'm very into it. And, I mean, it's coming... Like I said, you can play the demo for free now. I think the demo's on everything, isn't it? You can play on...
Apart from Stadia PC, and Switch, I believe.
Apart from Stadia and Switch. So apologies if those are your only platforms. But it's out on April the 1st, which is only a month away now. And I can actually see myself playing a lot of this game, whereas I didn't before. Mainly, and I think it might do quite well because... What else is there coming out between now and May, really?
So. I think it's... I'm not sure it's going to, like, destroy people's plans for the year by being so immersive, but I do think it's a really nice surprise, and it feels, like, pleasantly AA, like, in a way mm-hmm. that we don't really get so much of anymore. Like, it looks nice enough, it's kind of well-built enough, it's got some fun mechanical ideas, it feels, like, quite Xbox 360-y in that way. It's nice.
Yeah.
I'm really into it.
And it's got just about enough silliness to not take itself too seriously.
Well,
that's the thing we were worried about last night.
The main campaign definitely takes itself too seriously, including the bit which we haven't mentioned where the boss is referred to as a goddamn electro freak without a tongue in the cheek. But then the side missions tend to seem to be a bit sillier. Apart from the poor old man who gets shot immediately when you meet him.
It's war.
It's horrible.
These things happen in war. Have you never been in war?
Poor old Mr. Chang. But yeah, I think it's good. It's fun.
Yeah. I'm into it. I think we'll play it some more. Maybe we'll talk about more of it when we've actually played the full game.
Yes.
Another three-player co-op shooter game was announced this week. Aliens Fireteam.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, sounds like the Aliens game that a lot of people want, and in theory should be good, but this was said about Alien Colonial Marines, the infamous case, I'm sure people will be familiar with. I hope this is good, because I love Aliens. Aliens I do slightly prefer to Alien, although I think they're both absolutely incredible.
Mm.
And the thought of just me and two friends going into like an alien den, like fire flame throwing eggs and then killing a queen alien sounds fun to me. I don't know, it's hard to not have your doubts, because it feels like we've been burnt by alien games, apart from Isolation, which is obviously a good game, and B, just licensed games like this. I'm thinking like the one that sticks mainly in my head is Predator Hunting Grounds, which was just, for me, quite a poor version of what that could have been.
Yeah.
But yeah, do we have hope?
I definitely have hope. It's our IGN first for the month, and I haven't seen any of the stuff we've got for it, which is unusual, because usually I see quite a lot of it. And so I am really excited to see what comes of this. That first trailer, I don't think, set the world on fire for people. I think there's some, quite shonky animations in there. But the idea, to me, is so right. Like, making an Alien Left 4 Dead, essentially, just seems like a good idea. Or an Aliens Left 4 Dead, more to the point. And, you know, you can immediately think of, how all the weaponry you see in Aliens transfers to classes, and you can see how power-ups and different types of enemies would work. I like that there's synthetics in there as well to give you kind of like a more sort of, I guess, zombie enemy type as well. To kind
it
of
would
vary
just
up
be
that
weird
thing.
If the only enemy you fought were xenomorphs, it'd be like, oh, another xenomorph, is it?
Well, I think there's like 11 different types of xenomorphs, including your baby swarm type stuff, but also I wonder if they're going to get into your alien resurrection like mad bullshit different types of aliens. Which in this context I'm totally fine with. I'd certainly have reservations because of what we've had before, but I just think it's gotta be hard to ruin that concept, doesn't it? Isn't it?
It just comes down to, I mean, in theory, going around a jungle being hunted by the predator, or being the predator, should work, but it just didn't for me. I think a lot of it comes down to the shooting and to just the variety on offer at launch, because I think we looked briefly at what this studio's done before. It's a lot of MMO work. Mm. They don't really seem to have much shooter pedigree, which is the one thing I think games like this for, if the shooting doesn't feel good, then it doesn't make me want to play it.
To be fair, and we don't know who they've brought in. They might have
exactly.
teams and stuff.
Exactly. But that's I think they've got to nail the shooting, and they've just got to nail launching with enough stuff to not make people bounce off after 2 hours and be like, well, I've done that one mission, which is the same as the other three, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah. They must be pretty annoyed that Back 4 Blood suddenly turned up, because, if you'd launched this a year ago, we were like, it's basically Left 4 Dead with aliens, I think people would have lost it in a slightly more intense way than when there is basically Left 4 Dead 3 coming. But I'm definitely intrigued. It's not like what this needs is a very sizable demo to show me exactly how it works. That would really work for me.
For me, I don't even think that would do. I think it's just I'm not interested in this at all, on a basis that I think any shooter immediately neuters what Alien to me is all about, which is an absolutely unrelenting, impossible force. In Aliens, there's obviously a lot more action, but those Colonial Marines are always on the back foot, and basically they fucking lose. Yeah. And it's kind of like, you can't have a game where you lose. It just wouldn't be very satisfying.
What about
for me,
if you get all the way to the end and then right at the end of the mission you have to run back all the way you came? Would that work?
So, yeah. For me, it's just, it's not, I've got like this idea for a co-op alien game, but it's very much almost closer to Among Us in the idea it's like a bunch of people playing co-op on the Nostromo and literally just trying to get the Nostromo like to dock and to deliver while it's infected with an alien. And it's kind of like becomes a cooperative survival horror. But kind of like the idea of just gunning down aliens that is not done as a survival horror just does not work for me at all, especially when it's kind of like there are 100 other properties you could go out there and use enemies that can be gunned down in their legion.
You've given a good idea away for free there, Matt.
Yeah, someone go make it. I don't need any royalties.
Down the drain for you. Isn't Ripley and Xenomorph are now in Fortnite as well, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Sadly.
You know, does that give you the unrelenting terror you're looking for?
Well, it wasn't exactly what I was looking for. I mean, I've seen a few people get very, very finicky about that being in. I just sort of think it's quite funny seeing a Xenomorph do some flossing or whatever they're doing.
I want to see the Xenomorph do a Dougie. And that's it for me. That's the end of the series.
I find it quite funny. But I do find it quite funny, all the people are like, you know, this is a game largely played by everyone plays these games, but a lot of, what, like 10 to 15-year-olds play this game. They can't, you know,
legally watch Alien.
They maybe shouldn't have watched Alien or Aliens by that age, but, you know, I had watched it by 15 because I'm a hard nut, and I, you know.
I'm trying to remember how old I was when I would have watched.
That's what happened at school for you, is it? You went in and people were like, you watched Alien? What a hard nut. I better not beat him up.
Yeah. Look at him. He's seen Xenomorph.
He survived Alien.
He knows how to work a flamethrower. It's probably more the day I walked into school with a flamethrower and everyone was like, okay, let's just stay away from him.
Yeah, exactly. That's not being a hard nut, that's being a nutcase. That's a very different thing.
You can be both.
I love the word nutcase. Why is that? Why does that translate to maniac? A case full of nuts.
Is it just your nuts? You're full of nuts? I don't know. Or is it your case as in, like, they are a nutcase as in they...
Oh, like a head case type, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And your nuts. You know what I mean? Like, that's your nut, isn't it?
See, I've always imagined just a pencil case full of concus. Which does sound weird, to be fair, but,
when's the last time you played Conkers?
When I was a child.
We should get the Conkers out when we meet up for the first time. That's why I can't wait. This lockdown has deprived people from Conker battles.
Yeah, that's the big loss in the last year is Conkers. Chestnut trees are out of control in the last year.
Is this a very British thing, Conkers, or is this
absolutely
global?
Is.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of confused international.
Let's not explain Conkers. I want to alienate a fair chunk of our audience.
All I will say is, if you're not soaking your Conkers in vinegar, what are you doing?
Did you play a lot of Conkers?
No, not a lot.
I bet you min-max Conkers.
I was known as the Conkers hard nut.
I'm the hard nut with the hard nut.
I wouldn't. What is a conker?
That wasn't even me trying to be sexy, Matt. I saw that face of disgust.
Is a conker technically a seed? Or is it a nut? Like, what is it?
I mean, it's called a chestnut, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, is it a.
You can eat
it. Is a conker a nut?
I've never thought to eat a conker.
It's a chestnut. Like...
I think it's both. A conker is a seed, but it's a hard brown nut.
Never thought of eating a conker. Anyway.
You've never thought of eating a conker? They literally sell them on, like, London Bridge. They smell delicious.
But, yeah, the way... maybe I, you know, soaked them in vinegar. I'm not going to eat those ones.
I love the idea. Like, if you know nothing about conkers, imagine how fucking baffling the conversation we're having is. Like, it's gone from a game to selling nuts on London Bridge.
I just want people to piece it together for themselves.
Without Googling, if you're not from here and have never heard of Conkers before, send us in an email explaining what you think the game of Conkers is. You know it's got something to do with soaking in vinegar. You know it's got something to do with school children, and you know they're edible on London Bridge.
And good luck spelling Conkers if you've never heard of them as well.
They also, when they come off the tree, they come down in like giant spike packages, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, like green spikes.
They used to call it a nutcase.
There were, yeah, there was one that used to hang over the my school playground in my high school, and fuckers used to pick those up and absolutely pelt people with them.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
See, I had a little prime patch of them because at the block of like flats my nan used to live at, there was just a big tree there, but it was over her, it like it was in the park, but the fence, it meant that it leant over into her garden, which means there was a whole supply of them in there that other kids couldn't get to that were in a private garden, and I could pick all the best conkers. So I had like Sainsbury's bags full of conkers ready to take home and find the best ones for vinegary.
I love the idea of you filling an entire Sainsbury's bag full of conkers, like up to the brim with vinegar, walking into the playground going, this is my conker, and it's just a mega conker that you've created.
Just swinging it around my head, lighting it on fire.
We've talked about conkers more than we talked about aliens fire team.
Well, I think that shows what we want is we want a three-player Conker co-op.
I think you've brought up Conkers as a game before on the podcast.
Have I?
I think you have. I feel like you have.
I don't remember it. We talked about Conker's Bad Fur Day.
I don't really care about Conker's Bad Fur Day. You can fuck off. I want Conker's Good Conkers game.
Okay, let's get a Conker's game. We want to hear your pitches for Conker's game, and if you don't know what Conkers are...
Your pitches just, for what the fuck, you know, Conkers are.
Yeah, exactly. That's IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com for all your Conker feedback. Let's talk about a game that is out, which is the complete opposite of a terrifying co-op shooter experience.
Mm-hmm.
Maquette.
Yeah.
Is a lovely free game on PS Plus right now, if you have that. It's also out on PC.
Can I be one of those irritating people who's like, it's not actually free because you pay a subscription for it? So...
I said free if you have PS Plus.
Yeah, I know. So, it's know, just you've so, always you got know, to say know. That so that people aren't like...
Okay. It's how much is PS Plus a month? Is it
probably loads. I don't know. It's like it's 40 or 50 quid a year, isn't it?
Okay. Well, this month you're getting that and Final Fantasy VII Remake, so it kind of pays for itself in one go there. Let's talk about Maquette. We talked about Final Fantasy a little before.
Mm-hmm.
I finished it last night. I will say it's a surprisingly short game. I did it in just under 2 hours, mm-hmm. which I wasn't expecting a long game, but maybe a little bit longer than that. It's from Annapurna, who have a good long track record now of doing some of my favourite indie games. I know a lot of people's favourite just games in general for the last few years.
Mm.
It's kind of got that... So it's... A recursive puzzle game, which, you know...
So M.C. Escher kind of deal.
Escherish, yes. Escherish? Is that a, Escherish. But it's all about, manipulating perspective and size. It's something that's hard to explain, but when you see it, you'll know exactly what's going on. So imagine you're inside your house now, but inside your house is a model of your house. And if you pick up that model of your house, you're also picking up the house you're in.
What?
Do you get that? And also outside your house is a bigger version of your house
is
in.
Right.
So it's kind of worlds within themselves that also, when you move something in your world, it's moving the same object in the smaller and larger version of that world.
Yes. Presumably so then there is a static section. Because if you're just constantly moving, then you're not moving at all, are you?
Well, you can't... Exactly. But you can't... You can only move smaller objects, at least at the beginning you can. I'll say that. You can't move whole buildings that you're in, for example. But that's... It's a lot of puzzles based on that idea of perspective and size and manipulating. So, like, one of the very earliest puzzles you'll do is... You'll find a little tiny model of a bridge, and there's a gap in the real world, in your full-size world, that you can't jump across. So you have to go to the model version of the world you're in, put that tiny bridge in the gap that you can't jump across, and then in the real world, that bridge will have appeared that you can then walk across.
Do you get to see a tiny person in the model world?
You don't see you, no.
That's bullshit. I'm out.
But it's a lot of puzzles on that idea, and like I said, it's just under 2 hours in it. Kind of develops those ideas a little bit, but never... Like I really enjoyed this game, but I didn't... I've been looking forward to it for like a year now, and it never quite hit the mark that I thought it would. It, Like, I'd give it like a 7 or 8 around there. It's still very good, and especially if you're getting it for free, I'd recommend playing it. But, yeah, it just never develops those ideas more than that enough for me, and it kind of rushes its end. It comes to a conclusion very quickly. It's a story ultimately about a relationship, and it stars Bryce Dallas Howard and Seth Gable, and they're a real-life husband and wife, which is nice. Mm. So it's got them narrating it. I will say, you know, two professional actors have been in films and TV. They're okay.
I
could do better.
No, I definitely can do better, but they're all right. I don't know if it was like a work from home scenario, but it all sounds a little bit like they couldn't properly get into it or something. It sounds a slightly off to me, but it's the story of their relationship, and obviously it won't tell you what happens because what's the point in that? But it's kind of uses similar storytelling techniques to What Remains of Edith Finch. There's like little bits of narration, and then there's little bits of environmental storytelling, and like little bits where writing just appears on walls and tells you the story from someone's journal, basically. Mm-hmm. But again, it never quite hits that mark of Edith Finch, and I know that's a very high mark to hit because not many games have ever done that, I think. But yeah, it's just kind of, it's one of those that's, I really enjoyed it, but it slightly frustrated me. It never quite hit becoming a great puzzle game or a great story. What I will say is it's absolutely beautiful, and some of the later areas you go to are just like being almost drawn around you in a way. Mm. And some of those effects are really, really stunning. But yeah, lovely soundtrack as well. A lot of nice little acoustic-y songs if you're into that. So it's a nice little twee 2-hour game that largely its puzzles are kind of straightforward. There's a couple that have me thinking, I'll say that, but yeah. And it has the PlayStation Help if you're using that, which is very handy if you get stuck.
I've still never seen a game that uses it. Well, Demon's Souls has got it, but it's very rare I see anybody picking those up, probably because there aren't that many PlayStation 5 games yet. But
there is that.
No, there's that. I think Control does it very well. Right. I haven't played Control on PS5 yet, but I've heard it does it very well. But yeah, a couple of times I used maquettes, and it's very good at giving you very slight hints without saying, here's the solution, which right. would just be annoying.
That's cool.
But yeah.
I'm going to play it tonight.
Yeah, I think you'll have a lovely time.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good game, and I'd recommend it to people. Do you know what's a good game? And
Wait. Do we not want to explain to people that we're going to talk about WandaVision at the very end?
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Probably should have said that at the start.
Yeah.
Well, right after feedback, we're going to do a fully spoilery section on WandaVision about the whole season, in particular the finale, which is out today, if you're listening to this on Friday. We'll give our opinions on it. We're recording this part before we've seen it, so who knows? Could be awful. I imagine it won't be.
I bet Professor X turns up in a big helicopter
and says, I've got my conkers.
I'm British, so I understand. Yeah, it's Professor X with a big... Oh, no, I was going to give away what conkers was. Never mind. We've got to leave that as a mystery.
Who's got some vinegar?
Who's got some vinegar for Daddy X?
Oh, God. Yeah, anyway, after feedback right at the end, we'll do a spoiler section. So if you want to listen to that, listen to that. But for now, the end of search. Inside is the UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? Matt.
Hello.
Everyone enjoyed the game we did last week from, is it D-Dubs?
I think
yeah. D-Dubs, yeah.
Yeah, it was D-Dubs. We're bringing it back this week, but this time you've got some actors and actresses for us.
Yeah.
What did we call it again?
Oh.
You gave it a name.
I did give it one. Was it like... I don't know.
We've got to have a name, because people thought it was good.
I've gone. Why have you asked me this on the spot?
I want to know.
Is it like Top 4's IMDb... known for, what are they known for? I don't know.
What they known for?
We're not bringing that back.
What they known for? I like it.
what they known for.
Yeah.
What they do.
Fine.
How the other half live.
Do you want to explain the rules, Matt?
Yeah, go on then. So, I've got 10 actors here. And basically, you need to choose a number between 1 and 10. And then I'll give you the actor. And you've got to tell me what are the 4 films that they are known for on IMDb. I do not know how these are chosen. Like, could be fucking random for as far as I'm concerned. But the nice thing is you lot at home can now crack open IMDb and play along.
Ooh. Yeah, you can either play as the quizmaster or the player. Yeah. Isn't it a unique definitely. Format like that? Should we get going then?
Yeah, yeah. No. So, let's start with Joe.
Number nine.
John Travolta.
Oh.
Okay. What's that one where he's bald? I'm going to say...
Why is that the first one?
Saturday Night Fever.
Yes.
Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Grease.
Yes.
Those are the three, aren't they?
We've never had a quad, have we?
No.
Never. We had 1-3 last time.
Yeah. Straight out of the gate with a 3.
Oh. Can't think, I'd go for a 4 on this.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm thinking about the one where he's bald, but I can't even remember the name of it. Fuck it. Gotti.
Nah.
Okay.
The fourth one would have been Get Shorty.
Okay.
Yeah. I would have said Hairspray. I don't know why.
What's the bald one? He plays a Russian baldman.
Yeah, a baldman.
I can't remember.
I'm going to look up Travolta bald film.
Is it Assault on Precinct 19?
13.
Foy.
From Paris with Love?
From Paris with Love, of course.
Why would... He looks mad in that.
He does look mad.
He's very tanned as well.
Tan Baldman. Anyway. I hope he's the next actor. Tan Baldman.
Cardi.
3 points.
Would you like to choose a number that is not 9?
I'm going to go with number 1.
Number 1. That would be Christian Bale.
Wow, that's a lot of films there, isn't it?
He is number 1.
Okay. The Dark Knight.
Yep.
Sounds like you had a delicious drink.
Is it some of that ruby breakfast going down?
Oh, please.
From my experience of last time, it's a weird mixture of popular films and like ones they won awards for.
Uh-huh.
So, I'm trying to think what of a big... Is there another Batman one is the question. Do you know what? I'm going to go Vice because he won the Oscar for it.
It's not Vice.
Damn
it.
I forgot he won an Oscar for that.
I think he did anyway. I don't think I'm making that up. Do you know what? This is an outside bet.
Okay.
American Hustle.
Yes. It is American Hustle.
You always get noticed for having weird hair.
I'm going to carry on the David O. Russell train. The Fighter.
No, The Fighter.
There we go. 2. I'll take 2 most days.
Go on then.
Was right. Batman Begins there?
It the was, prestige? Yeah. Batman Begins was there. And the other one was American Psycho.
Of course, yeah. Good shout.
Joe.
I should have got Batman Begins. That was number 1, wasn't it?
Yeah,
number 7.
Number 7.
Lucky number 11. It better be Hartnett.
Is.
I quite like that film.
It's alright.
Yeah, sure. Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman.
Well, are you going with lucky number 7?
I'm not. I'm going to go for Shawshank Redemp.
No.
Fuck you.
Ooh, I know.
Not lucky nor 7. 7.
7 is there.
I'm going to go...
What a stupid name for a film.
Lucky number 11.
11.
What? Else, I'm gonna I'm going to say Bruce Almighty.
No Bruce Almighty.
That was a weirdly influential Freeman performance. Driving Miss Daisy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. I would have gone March of the Penguins. Is that there?
It's not, no.
Oh. I almost went for reasons... I don't know why, but when I think of Morgan Freeman, I think of Along Came a Spider. The nuclear war film.
Is that all your guesses, Joe?
I thought that was all.
Yeah, that was. So you could have had Invictus, and you could have had Million Dollar Baby.
I would not ever have thought of Invictus.
No, Invictus is a film I think a lot of people have forgotten about. Mm-hmm.
Right, it's 5 to Joe, 2 to Cardi. What do you want, Cardi?
Sorry, I just want to point out, just before we get any things about it, Along Came a Spider isn't about nuclear war. That's a different film. It's a psychological thriller. What's the one where he's anything. A nuclear war film? Anyway, carry on. Play the game.
I'll go with 5.
Number 5 is Chris Evans.
Assuming not the TGIF presenter.
No, not. Not.
You ever know who you, Matt? You trickster.
This is Chris Evans, the Hollywood hunk.
See, there's so many Marvel ones, and one of them's got to be there, at least one, but which one? That's the question, isn't it? I'm just going to go Captain America, the First Avenger.
Is there? It's 1 point.
Now, which other ones? Captain America Civil War?
Is there? 1 point.
Oh, are they all going to be? I'm going to go a more recent one. I'm going to go Knives Out.
Is not there.
Oh, Matt's got the presenting shoes on now. I like it.
What other Chris? Do I go? It seems boring to go Marvel again, but what other big ones are there? Chris Evans. He's only a small role. Chris. Come on, Chris.
I've got a guess. I'm ready.
Do I go Marvel again? I'm not going to. I'm going to go Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
He's not there.
Is Snowpiercer on there?
It's not. What? They are. 3 Captain America films and the Avengers.
Oh, poor Chris Evans. That must be annoying.
That puts Cardi on 4, Joe on 5. Joe, choose me a number.
The film was The Sum of All Fears. Anyway.
Is that a Clancy one?
It is a Clancy one.
Yeah. I think I had the video game of that, and it was just a bad reskin of a early Rainbow Six game.
There was a video game of The Sum of All Fears?
On PlayStation 2, I believe. I think I bought it from HMV in like a 2 for £15.
Oh, when we get back in the studio, can we do playthroughs of really old, bad licensed games?
Oh, can we play Apocalypse with Bruce Willis? Yes. It's not a licensed game, it's just got Bruce Willis in it. The Sum of All Fears is about a plot by an Austrian neo-Nazi who wants to establish a fascist superstate in Europe. Just so
you know. Sounds grim.
Right. Number 10.
Number 10? That's Zoe Saldana.
This is a hard one, and I'm not happy about it at all.
There's a few franchises over there.
Yeah.
Oh, which ones, though? Don't be the wrong one.
I'm going... Well... Avatar?
Yep, that is there.
Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Yes, that is there.
All right. Avengers Infinity War.
No, it's not there.
Oh no, she's more in the second one.
She's in both.
Yeah, but she's more integral.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say Endgame then as well, just in case.
No, it's not there.
Well, I would have gone Star Trek.
Yep, oh, Star fuck! Trek. I forgot about Star Trek!
Star Trek is there, and the other one was Guardians Volume 2.
Yeah.
That is.
Oh well.
Another 2 points to Joe, bringing him to 7.
Zoe Saldana has been big in nerd culture.
Yeah, she's been in huge films. Is it Columbiana as well? She did. Is
that... yeah, I think so.
What's
yeah.
Columbiana?
Like a mid-2000s like a action flick?
Action film, yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, it's not on the list of... But then,
I'm the guy that got Along Came a Spider and the Sum of All Fears mixed up, so what do I know?
You can turn your nose up at Columbiana, but she did win the Teen Choice Award for Best Movie Actress Action Adventure for it.
So. Fair play. Fair play. Yeah.
Return to the Sum of All Fears, because I got it open in a Google on the side just to figure out where the game was. It was released on Microsoft Windows, PlayStation 2, GameCube, and had another version for Game Boy Advance.
What a world.
And literally doesn't have Morgan Freeman and an Affleck on the cover.
On the cover is different to in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
What numbers have we got left?
Cardi, you can choose from 2, 3, 4, 6, 8...
I'll go with 4.
Go with 4. That would be Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, okay. Good one.
Alien.
Is there.
Aliens.
Is not there.
Come on now. That's not a film. I'm not saying come on now, is it? Starring Sigourney Weaver. Ghostbusters.
Is not there.
What? Oh, come on. Stop giggling. Stop. Avatar?
Is there.
That is an insult to the career of Sigourney.
the other two?
The two you were missing were Alien Resurrection.
Oh, fuck off.
And Galaxy Quest.
Jesus Christ.
That brings you to Galaxy 6
Quest
points.
Is fun.
Yeah. That brings you to 6 points, Cardi. Just tailing behind Joe by 1. Joe.
Yes.
You can either have 2, 3, 6, or 8.
6.
Number 6 is Anna Kendrick.
Okay. Which is the one she's in? Pitch Perfect.
Yes.
Up in the Air.
Yes.
I really like that film.
Up in the Air is genuinely a phenomenal film. I love it.
People to talk more about Up in the Air.
That was in that Oscar year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was my last year at uni, I think.
Anna Kendrick has been in movies. I'm going to say Pitch Perfect 2.
No.
People love Pitch Perfect. I don't get it.
Pitch Perfect is one of those films that I stick on when I'm feeling a bit sad. And I'm like, going to rave out to some pop.
Fair play. Just going to say Scott Pilgrim, even though I know it's wrong.
No. The two you're missing would be Pitch Perfect 3.
Oh,
worst of the trilogy.
I didn't even know it was there.
Yep.
And sorry, what was the other one?
And Into the Woods.
Oh, I forgot about that film.
So there we go. Another 2 to Joe.
Okay, so
bringing him to 9.
I need a 3. So what I've got. I've got 2, 3, 8.
2, 3, and 8, yeah.
I'm going to go with number 8.
Number 8.
Let's pick my fucking number.
Charlize Theron.
Okay. Mad Max Fury Road.
Yep, that's there.
Monster.
Yep, it's there.
What other massive films has she been in? She's a weird one. She's very, very famous, but when you try and think of Charlize Theron films, you struggle a little bit. Well, I do anyway.
So I'm shit. The thing that I'm shit at quizzes is like I know quite a lot about like film, for example, but put me on the spot and I find it very difficult to like find it in the library of my brain.
Charlize. Atomic Blonde?
No.
That was my next guess as well.
I know people saw it. All right, one more shot, please. I'm really struggling to think of one.
man.
This is annoying. I literally can't think of another Charlize Theron film.
You gonna blank it? You gonna give up?
I'm gonna make up a film.
Okay.
Called.
Can you not even make up a film?
Well, I don't know. City Life.
Funnily enough, Cardi, no City Life.
What? I don't have a complete blank there.
I spent most of that trying to think of the name of Aeon Flux, and for a while, all I could think of was After Eight.
What are the other ones?
The other two are Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah.
Gosh.
My dad's an extra in that film. He's a dead soldier.
Beautiful.
Yep.
And Tully.
Oh. What the fuck is Tully?
No one saw that.
Tully
came out like 2 years ago.
Oh, is that a Diablo Cody number? Diablo.
Yeah.
It's either a Diablo Cody one or a Reitman one. Or both.
It's both. It's Reitman and Cody.
Yeah. I watched it on a plane. It's alright.
Is it? Yeah. Well, there we go. I'm happy with two, though.
Two's Cardi. Bringing him to eight. Behind Joe's nine.
Behind.
Joe.
One left each.
Three.
Number three is The Genius. Nicolas Cage.
I thought you were going to say, I didn't know who the genius was. I was like, is it a rapper? Nicolas Cage. This is going to be hard, isn't it? Con Air.
No.
Fuck. IMDb. Mandy.
No.
Yeah, thought that might be two.
A hard one with them, isn't it?
Mm. A plethora of options from across the ages.
I know, there's a lot of ages. Raising Arizona.
No.
Oh, fuck.
I thought that one would have been.
Why can I only think of Lord of War? I'm not saying Lord of War. The film in which Jared Leto dies by having a whole globe of cocaine. Ghost Rider?
No.
Fuck.
No, it's a blank.
I've dropped it. The ball at the end on a cage number.
The only ones I would have gone for is National Treasure.
No, not there either.
Is the vampire one on there?
No.
What's you he have been in?
Before?
Face
what
Off?
What he's most known... Face Off, yeah.
Oh, of course.
Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The Rock.
Oh, it's all those ones.
And Next.
Next!
You remember Next?
Next!
Oh,
I can't believe number three let me down.
I didn't think I'd be in this position.
Yeah, Cardi, we've just one left to go and you only need
to take
1 point. This would be...
Isn't it a point to draw?
So it's a point to draw, 2 points to overtake. Elizabeth Moss.
That is a harder one than I thought. But,
like,
actually,
can I confirm is this just films?
I believe that I said to you...
I'm going to take the risk that Mad Men is there.
It's not.
Okay.
Peggy got shafted. Unbelievable.
That is mad. But I still think The Handmaid's Tale might be there.
It is indeed.
Oh, he's drawn.
Two more Elizabeth Moss. Okay. Films that Elizabeth Moss is in. Invisible Man?
It is, yeah.
And I'm trying to think of one more. Was she in Us?
And it's there.
Yes.
There we go.
Where are you seeing this? I was just playing along and I've got a different four.
Well, is it based on your history then?
That is interesting.
I don't think it is.
Is it in the opening paragraph?
No, there's a set of four images that are probably two sections down.
I've got,
it's because in the opening paragraph of it, it says she is best known for, and then lists four things, but they are four different things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's weird. And then the one I love, I forgot that was a thing.
Yeah.
There we go.
That brings Cardi to 11 points.
Furious.
Well played,
Nicholas.
Joe.
I mean, bloody
Nicholas Cage did you in.
He did.
Once again, your enemy.
Yeah, me and Cage go way back.
He should settle over Conkers. Conkers with Nicolas Cage. Now that's a video that would do millions.
I was
it would either
watching...
do millions or very little indeed.
I was watching the other day because I was doing a junket for an upcoming episode of IGN Comments. So I was looking back at some. Do you remember when we did comments with Michael Sheen and he was talking about Nicolas Cage's glass house?
Yes, I do remember that. I was in the room for that. It was very amazing.
What a lunatic.
Very odd. Yeah, I'd like to meet Nicolas Cage. I imagine it's a dangerous experience, but one I'd like to experience.
I think he'd be perfectly lovely in person, but if you went out for a drink, you'd end up having a night that resembled a Nicolas Cage.
You'd end up doing a Jared Leto and having a globe full of cocaine.
Yeah, exactly.
Or being offered it. I'm not saying I'd accept the globe full of cocaine.
You would, you dirty little
Should we do some feedback before moving on to WandaVision?
Yes. This is from Ivan in St. Petersburg. And that's...
I'd love to go to St. Petersburg.
That's a place that I didn't think people would be listening to us from, so this is cool. Ivan says, "Hello, gentlemen. At last, I have a reason to write, because I came up with some questions to ask you. I've thought about writing before, when you had been discussing weird things that grandmas eat, but then decided against it. Mainly because the thing that my grandma ate white bread with sour cream and sugar and called it cake. It was probably because she'd lived in the USSR for more than 60 years. We definitely could have afforded cake when she was doing it. Also, I think that her bread cake was probably pretty tasty. It does sound quite good. White bread with sour cream and sugar. I bet that's great.
That sounds disgusting.
Well, I say this as someone with a Latvian grandfather, so this is... maybe that just runs in the Eastern European
side. I don't have anyone's grandma's bread cake.
There's a lot. A lot of sour cream in my family's recipes. It's great.
I don't like sour cream. That's probably what's turning me off of this.
Before the questions, says Ivan, I would like to thank you for the regular entertainment during these hard times, and also thank all the people that create games for the Endless Search, which is a really good point. Last week, because they're much better at it than us, last week my girlfriend and I played our version of the IMDb game where you need to guess what film's actors are famous for, and it was very fun. We call it What They Do Now? I can't remember what we called it.
What they known for.
What they known for. Now to the questions. Number one. Do any of you consider the length of a video game before starting it? I always check the sites like howlongtobeat.com. I'm going to enter that. And sometimes when I see that even the main story takes more than 30 hours to finish, it kind of scares me away from the game. I just know that I can't only play one game for a couple of months, every time I have some spare time. Strangely, that doesn't stop me from averaging about 300 hours a year on Football Manager. I don't generally check the length of a video game before starting it, unless it's one of those ones where I'm going back to it, like a really old
thing. I know what you mean. I kind of do that, but yeah, I do the same thing I think Ivan does, which is I'll look at a game and be like, oh god, 50 hours, that seems a long, and then instead just play 50 hours of FIFA or Call of Duty instead. I'm like, well, I could have experienced something new there, couldn't I? But
yep.
I didn't.
I've played so much FIFA recently and it feels like I'm just avoiding responsibilities.
I think because we play quite a lot of games as they come out on release, obviously How Long to Beat isn't helpful at that point because there's not the database. But certainly, like, I think, like you, Joe, kind of like, if I'm thinking, oh, you know what, I might go back and replay something, and then I'll have a look at how long it's going to be, because I sort of judge it, do I have time to play like this 30 hour game before something new is coming out that I know I'm going to have to drop it for. And also kind of like, if I've got like four things in mind, I'm like, these are four things I wouldn't mind replaying, I will choose probably the one that's shortest.
Yeah, I'm kind of doing that with God of War at the moment because I'm replaying it and I know that story off by heart. So I'm just kind of, I know it's like 25 hours to 30, like roughly, and I'm just kind of chipping away at it because I could not play that game for 2 weeks and know exactly where the story is where I left it off. So I think it's easier when you're replaying to do that. But
yeah,
I know what you mean.
Just to explain my weird stop during that to the listeners, because I've now checked. It's because recently Ziff Davis, our parent company, bought How Long to Beat, and I was just going to say that. And then I realised that maybe that hadn't been announced yet, and I was really worried that I was about to give away corporate secrets.
Yeah, yeah, we weren't laughing at you at all, Ivan. We were laughing at Joe.
Yeah.
Joe and his near blunder.
Well, it was only a theoretical blunder, and it wouldn't have been one of those.
Exactly. That's fine.
Number two from Ivan. Do any of you watch British panel comedy shows regularly? And if yes, then which and how many shows a week? Sounds like we're being interrogated. It seems to me that British television produces an overwhelming amount of such shows. I agree. Sometimes it feels like they must occupy 80% of the airtime. I myself watch Taskmaster and The Big Fat Quiz and feel a little jealous that television in Russia can't create such good shows.
I do agree, there's too many of those shows, and it's the same rotating cast, about 12 people on all of them.
Yeah, it's so, there are only 15 UK comedians.
I don't really watch a lot of them, because I find most of the people on them a little irritating. But I will say, like, Would I Lie to You is probably one of the more consistent ones.
Would I Lie to You? That one's quite fun. I don't watch any regularly other than Taskmaster, which I am obsessed with, as I've brought up before. What I Lie to You is always good for a clip, especially Bob Mortimer. Yeah. And back in the day, Shooting Stars was the one for me, but that was kind of a send-up of panel shows to a certain extent.
Exactly. Do you know what? 8 out of 10 Cats Do Countdown can be all right. It depends how you get along with Jimmy Carr.
Yeah.
But I don't really watch a lot of them. But I do agree, we make an overwhelming amount of them.
It is nuts.
It's because they're cheap and easy.
Well, especially considering, like, other countries just don't make them. Like, they're not a thing in America, for instance. And it's, like, it is a very peculiarly British format. Like, bunch of comedians pretending to play a quiz, but no one actually gives a shit about the result. It's just an odd thing.
Maybe we just have, like, lazy people who make TV shows. Just, like, stick a bunch of comedians in a room and they'll make something funny and we can put it together. Yeah. Done. But, yeah, there's a couple of suggestions there.
Matt, you got any faves?
I'm a bit like Cardi. Like, you know what? I'm probably one of the reasons why I'm not very funny is probably because I don't watch that much comedy. Like, I tend to find myself end up watching quite a lot of very serious dramas.
But God, you know how to make people cry.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, he's so dramatic.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ivan. Have you got?
Yeah, thank you. It's lovely to hear from Russia. I'd love to go to Russia one day. I don't know about you boys.
I would. I think it would be very interesting.
There we go.
Right.
Matt.
Yeah, got one in from Dan, who says, no surname, so hi Dan, whichever Dan it is. I'm sure you will know it's you by the fact that I believe, Cardi, this was probably the subject line of the email.
Mm.
Was it grandma who made us eat it?
Are you sure this isn't an endless search game?
That would be a good endless search game.
Hey all, Dan from Boston here. Love the podcast. I am not one to write into things often, but listening to all the weird food combos and the things that grandmas feed their grandkids, I figured I would add my story whether you want it or not. Now, to preface, I didn't learn this from my grandma, but I believe it originates with her as the culprit. As a young child...
A meal should never have a culprit, should it?
A grandma should never be a culprit.
As a young child, my room was right above the kitchen, and we had a vent leading down to it. My dad wasn't that great of a cook, but was decent with breakfast. Many Sunday mornings, I would be woken by the loud grind of a blender and smells of bacon wafting up through the vent. One food I loved to
eat. Did you live in the vent? Oh... Like, because you say that there's a vent above the kitchen and there was a vent above the kitchen, but you don't say the vent went into your bedroom. So is your bedroom the vent?
Is he living in like a dumb waiter?
Is Dan a little vent dweller and his grandma hid him up there for the bacon smells? Let's find out.
One food I loved as a child was French toast. My dad taught me to take your French toast and slather it in mayonnaise before dunking it in sugary syrup.
No.
He points out that this is not maple syrup. It's
just
sugar
syrup.
Oh, is
it that fake maple syrup?
Sugary syrup, yeah. Mm.
It was quite good, and we only did this with homemade French toast. Now, I went my whole life until high school thinking that this was the norm. I guess it never came up. wasn't until I was with my ex-girlfriend's family on vacation and asked for mayonnaise at breakfast one day and got blank stares back. They pulled it out of the fridge, and as I slathered it on the French toast that my girlfriend's aunt had just made, the room erupted into outbursts.
Outbursts?
I'm just pointing, going, heathen, heathen.
I'm imagining people, like, wailing, like, biblically. Just like, ah!
Setting themselves on fire.
They found this to be revolting, and later my ex would find every opportunity to tell new people about this disgusting food combo. Wow. Apparently no one I knew outside my family did this. So I did a little digging, and after a visit from my uncle from across the country, I found it led back to none other than Grandma.
Grandma in the vents with the mayonnaise.
I still think it's normal and great, so I wasn't sure about writing in, but I figured why not. So thank you for the great podcast, and would you kindly please respect the sea? Best, Dan.
I will. I mean, Dan, that does sound disgusting, but you do you. I mean, you know, if you enjoy it.
I know some people are grossed out by mayonnaise on, like, cheese on toast or, like, a grilled cheese or whatever.
Well, that's how you get the bread nice and crispy.
Well, that's what... So I really like that. And I know some people hate it. But I've never heard about it as, like, a sweet, savoury, like, salted caramel situation.
So when this started explaining, I thought what this might have been was pre-cooked, and it was an odd way of making... French, because obviously French toast is basically bathed in eggs, right? That's how you kind of make it. So I thought it was like, is he like reducing down the mayonnaise to kind of infuse it with egg? But no.
I don't need sweet mayonnaise. I mean, is it kind of a riff on a deconstructed meringue?
Is it a riff on a deconstructed meringue? Ask your grandma, Dan. Get back to us.
I don't know. The things we learn. And the things we wish we hadn't. I've got one piece of feedback here from Michael Gulliver, who says, ahoy all.
Hello.
Little sea-based welcome. Listened for years and have always wanted to write in, but never had a good enough reason. I haven't nearly drowned, nor am I a culinary renegade.
I love that we've reduced our podcast's nearly, what is it, 600 episode history to drowning and bad food.
Yeah. You can, just remind you, you can write in if you're not either of those.
We're not going to fucking read it, though. So,
well, we are now. But no, because we've got another topic that Mark has to write in about. So a discontinued drink that nobody has ever acknowledged exists is a good enough reason than any.
This is a great thing. Discontinued drinks is a rich vein.
So I had a little search. Sorry, just to break away from Michael for a second. I had a little search for the Ruby Breakfast Juice. I think it may still be available. Maybe just not as widely as it once was.
What? Boutique breakfast? Anyway,
I don't know, maybe
on.
I'm wrong.
So it's Michael Sainsbury's.
It's in Sainsbury's, it's about out of stock.
Well,
so,
it might come back in stock if it's still listed.
Anyway.
Michael says, as a kid, I absolutely loved the tropical flavour milkshakes from McDonald's. I don't remember that at all.
No.
They were luminous yellow, so you knew they were good for you. However, nobody seems to remember them, so I could very well be making this up. I don't remember this at all.
I mean, I'm going to Google tropical milkshake McDonald's.
Luminous yellow. I mean, I don't like a citrusy, milky sort of thing, like... That you don't make a citrus ice cream, make a citrus sorbet. Come on.
Oh.
The tropical double tastes milkshake, which was vanilla
tropical
milkshake with mango and passion fruit syrup, was on the menu during the summer of 2011. It came off menu around September 2011.
Wow. It is like a 1 to 2 month phenomenon.
I do remember they did like a chocolate caramel milkshake for a while and it was incredible.
I mean, to be honest, that sounds really good. Vanilla and mango, or whatever the hell those things were. Yeah. Vanilla and things. They sound good.
Mark says, while we're at it, the McChief Burger when Disney's Pocahontas came out was a banger too. Although that name sounds problematic.
McChief. We're all doing some Googling. Yeah.
What
was on the McChief Burger?
It was the promotion of 1995, apparently.
What was on that?
I'm trying to find out.
Trying to get like what I have no idea
looks that would fucking grim.
I've only got a pic. Have you just got the picture of it, Joe? Yeah. It doesn't say what's on it.
It looks like it looks like knobbly meat.
It's a bit like a McRib, doesn't it?
I think it's maybe burger. Salsa and then like a maybe a like a herby or chivy mayonnaise.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look good. But it is also one of those pictures from the 90s where it looks like the 90s was about 300,000 years ago. So, you know, maybe it's just...
Yeah, I'm not sure about the McChief burger, but...
I have noticed that in conjunction with the Hunchback of Notre Dame, they made a McChicken cordon bleu.
Which sounds like some McQuasimodo or something. It's just like one half of it is like taller than the other.
A McChicken sandwich with ham, garlic, cheese, lettuce, tomato and smoky bacon flavoured sauce. That sounds wicked. Bring back the McChicken cordon bleu.
I want that campaign. Are we now leaning into favourite McDonald's Happy Meal promotions and burgers?
There was a Burger King one where you got like a little sort of X-Files, Men in Black test, where you had to put your thumbprint on it and it would leave your thumbprint on it in heat mark, and it was great. Anyway,
there we go. Michael also has a quick question. Will WandaVision bring back the old style of releasing episodes weekly rather than the next Netflix model of gorge on this, you little piggies, season dump approach?
I believe that's the technical term.
That is what they use. I've really enjoyed watching and debating the episodes with friends and family week to week. What are your thoughts? I kind of see both sides. So a good example of this moment is I'm watching Lost for the first time. And I love having every episode available because there are so many, so I can just do like three in a row if I want. But I do imagine, like, I'm liking it, but I'm not loving it. Like, I imagine at the time going week to week being like, what the hell is going on, would have been the optimal way of watching Lost.
What I'm really enjoying is having both. Like, I'm watching WandaVision and Snowpiercer week to week, but I'm in between that, we're fitting in loads of other stuff, like watching documentary series, or like, I'm really excited about that Age of the Samurai thing because I'm a fucking nerd. you know, and like all the kind of true crime documentaries. We watched that Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel, which wasn't great, but like, I like those Netflix things where it's sometimes it's just dropping a bunch of stuff. I was really enjoying Star Trek Discovery that way as well before I stopped caring about Star Trek Discovery. So I think the mixture, I don't think it's going to bring it back, but I think people are more willing to kind of take that stuff, particularly on the Disney side where there is, you know, it's built around mysteries and it's built around debate.
It's half bringing it back, 'cause I think all Disney Plus shows are going to be like that.
Yeah, and also I think it's largely Netflix that does this, and I think it's because that just shows how prominent Netflix is in the TV conversation, but an awful lot of Amazon Prime is done weekly, like The Boys was done weekly, and I think kind of like American Gods was as well, and kind of their big sort of things tend to be. And obviously quite a lot of television is still on television where it is done weekly rather than, you know, dropped it at once. So I think it just shows that how big Netflix is in this conversation, that's the way we think about it. I don't think Netflix are ever going to change because they like it, because it's a big incentive to get people to sub, isn't it? It's like having those big dumps.
And I think they just have much more content to drop than these other people, don't they? So they can just afford to drop a whole season, whereas Disney have this one show at a time, whereas they need to keep you subscribing for 3 months to watch the whole run.
I do wonder if we get to a point where, you know, obviously like every major network in the US is now opening its own streaming network. And I do wonder whether there's going to start being like, well, you can watch it weekly on TV, but if you pay, you can watch it all now and kind of treat it as like a premium service that way. And that might lead to, because obviously we don't have those services in the UK, so that might lead to getting full dumps of weekly TV series over here. But I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
It's interesting. Yeah, it is. Well, speaking of WandaVision, why don't we fast forward in time a little bit and talk about the last episode on what we think may be coming next in the MCU. I don't know. Who knows what we'll have to talk about?
We might
find out.
Okay, I would like you to play this clip now, Cardi. What if, and I don't want to go crazy here, just before, you know, in the final version of WandaVision, we are introduced to a goddamn Electro freak. That would be really interesting. And it might sound a little something like this.
He's a goddamn Electro freak.
And we're back. WandaVision is over. It is no more, never to return, just like Vision. Or is he?
Doesn't feel like it, does it?
No. I feel like this is, by the way, full spoilers for WandaVision here. but he was already gone anyway. So, yeah, I feel like overall, I'm going to put this out there, overall as a series, really enjoyed it. I did, and yes. Do you know what? I did enjoy the last episode. It just didn't, I think they built up expectations and it maybe didn't hit quite as hard as it could have, I think is the general opinion around here. I don't know what the general opinion on the internet is, but.
I think it's been interesting today based on the fact that in this very podcast, but yesterday for us, we were talking about the nice mix of weekly stuff versus binge stuff. And already today I've seen multiple people saying WandaVision has been hurt by being released weekly in retrospect because the amount of fan theory work and the amount of detective stuff that happens means people create this idea of like where it's going to go that doesn't come true and leads them to be disappointed in a thing that otherwise they'd never have even thought of before.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with it, but I think it is it's a good line of thinking.
I mean, what do you think that mostly comes down to? Do you think, I suppose the first two or three episodes did set it up as more of a mystery drama, like what's going on here?
Yeah, I think one of its biggest faults is that it pretended it was a mystery box formula, and it's not. It's just quite a straight up story about grief. And I kind of wish it had just embraced that rather than occasionally pretending that it was hiding something much bigger, which, as you say, Joe, has kind of led to an awful lot of fan theories. And I, from a very cynical point of view, I think there's been certain things put in the end of episodes just to encourage Twitter debate so that everybody knows that WandaVision is still a big deal. And sometimes that hasn't helped it. But yeah, I agree with you, Cardi. Like, the sum of all its parts, I think it is one of the most interesting and enjoyable things that Marvel have done. Just ending has been slightly uneven for the last couple of episodes.
Yeah. I feel like that is, and I have enjoyed almost all of it. I think like the main crux of it, and I think it culminated in quite a way this week, was just the whole part of Pietro and what was almost like, boner joke aside, like that was, I didn't think, that was just odd to me that was what the whole punchline to this whole arc of that character was. But it had a big emotional impact at the start, like when he first appeared, and the Halloween episode, I thought he was really good. And then, as soon as you realise, okay, one, it's not actually anything to do with a multiverse, it's just the X-Men universe
actor.
Quicksilver appearing like that, for no real reason. And I think that's what's annoyed me, because, like, if you're going to do that, do make it a multiverse thing. Don't just make it a nod to fans, because it makes absolutely, I know it's just actors and it's a show, but it makes absolutely zero sense that he would look like that in that universe. I don't know.
It's just a silly decision. I think it's them thinking that they have perhaps more, I don't know what they think. It feels like...
Did they think it was all just very funny?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It feels like they think it's a really funny joke when actually, to fans, it's quite meaningful. Like,
especially when you're...
pathetic, but there's a certain
especially
element
when you are on the cusp in this whole 20-plus film and TV journey of introducing the multiverse for the first time. And that felt like the first step into it. I don't know if it was a deliberate fake out. I'm sure a lot of people enjoyed that whole character and what, like, I've seen a lot of people think that joke that his name is Ralph Boner is the funniest thing in the whole
series. It's not though, is it? It's not. Like, as you say, kind of like, it's, we all knew that this was the setup for the multiverse, kind of like, we've been told that this would lead into the multiverse of madness stuff. So that puts you in a certain frame of mind. And as you say, Joe, kind of like, people are invested. Like, there's not really been anything like the MCU before in terms of long-term audience investment, to the point it's, the fans are rabid, basically. Like, you've got people that will feel very, very betrayed by this move. And I think is, like, I don't really know how to explain it, basically.
But yeah, that's the worst thing about the whole series covered, I think. Some of the best is just Elizabeth Olsen and the whole Scarlet Witch character, I think, has come on a lot. And I feel like her performance has been incredible throughout. And there's some moments in this episode, especially when she's transforming pretty much into a villain at points, like in front of our eyes. The costume looks incredible. And just, you've got that really tender moment. And those two actors, her and Paul Bettany, like together, they know how to do a good emotional scene. Like, they've done multiple goodbyes now, so they should be good at it. But like, that was again a real, like when they're putting the kids to bed and like he's melting in front of her eyes again. Like, you do really feel it. But then, yeah, there is that thing in the back of your head of like, well, there's another Vision in the world now, and he's obviously coming back. So it just doesn't have that same like heartbreak that it probably should have.
Yeah, I think taking that scene by itself, I think it's one of the best scenes in the show. Like the kind of, you know, the literal and metaphorical sort of wall of death coming towards them. Yeah. It's going to like end her life in the background of multiple shots. Is like, it's a very cool, very Marvel way of doing like accepting the end, and like coupled with some very tender acting and like a couple of actors who, like you say, have gotten very good at this and made their relationship very believable. Like, if you'd said 15 years ago that Paul, the guy played Chaucer in A Knight's Tale and one of the Olsen twins,
have you seen Wimbledon, mate,
were going to be like a wonderful on-screen couple, you would have just been like, what's going on? But they've nailed it. Like, it's really good. And yeah, so I thought that really worked. But you're absolutely right. Like, the White Vision stuff, again, I actually, and taken in isolation, the two Visions discussing their stuff was a good scene. I enjoyed the fact that they stopped fucking fighting, because the whole fighting sequence of this episode really bored me. I know that's something that boring critics say about Marvel films a lot. Like, why does there have to be so much fighting? And I don't agree. Like, if you take the fighting out of almost any Marvel film, it's pretty...
Some of them can be incredible. Like,
Thor Ragnarok, you know. Like, it earns it. But WandaVision doesn't feel like it needed this version of fighting. It felt like a lot of conflicts for the sake of it, which is why you get to the sake of, to the point of, like, the sword director has to come in and be a bad guy and shoot children, and you're just like, but there's no reason, there's barely any reason for him to be in this. Like, him, the Vision fight, which ended well, thankfully. To be honest, like, the Agatha versus Wanda fight wasn't interesting until it stopped being about, like, shooting each other with fireballs.
Very Harry Potter, wasn't it? Very just, like, random spells coming out of people.
Again, like the rest of the show, it only became interesting when it became a point of, like, a battle of wills and a battle of emotions. Like, when they're one of them's tied up and scared, the other one's tied up and scared, they're both trapped inside their own versions of the same thing. Like, that's all clever writing. I just didn't need them throwing, like, energy balls at each other and going grey. Like, it was just odd. And I think it speaks to, like, a lot of the sidelining of characters in this. Like, Wu and Darcy ultimately were there as just, like, comedy sidekicks the whole time. There's no fundamental reason for them to come back. I don't think Monica Rambeau got a particularly great entrance as a new superhero in the Marvel Universe. Like, she doesn't seem at all surprised that she has superpowers out of nowhere.
No, it's
and
very
neither
odd,
does anyone else. Like,
yeah, it's all very bizarre. I'm not sure. It's a weird, like, because they normally nail that. The first time their introductions to, like, superheroes are like, really cool moments.
Like 15 of these movies have been fucking origin stories. They must be good at origin stories now. Like, it's
really, because we're still not really, they never really expect, and I know it's going to come in, perhaps Secret Invasion. She's going to be in Miss Marvel as well, is she?
I think it's because, like, there's a link to the Captain Marvel character, right? And therefore, that links to Ms. Marvel.
I think
she's
been cast. Yeah. But, like, we still, and I know it's fine keeping mysteries, but we still don't know a lot about her. I did think the moment with her and Wanda saying, like, I would have done exactly what you did was a good moment. Like, that shows a lot about her character and, like, ultimately not blaming Wanda not putting her as a villain ultimately, although she still could turn that way, we don't know. But yeah, we don't, unless you read the comics, I still don't really know what Monica Rambeau's powers are. She can go see through.
Well, she can, she can apparently stop bullets, or at least slow them down to the point where they just drop out the back. And like, we know that she can view the electromagnetic spectrum because that was when she was kind of busting through, through the hex. But yeah, I think, especially after they built up so much antagonism between her and Hayward, I think, like, as Joe was saying, like, Hayward is fucking pointless. I thought he was really bad in this episode. Like, he was quite bad in the previous one, but they turned him...
He turns up, tries to shoot some kids, and then crashes his car 5 seconds later.
But also, like, there's no switch... I know this is kind of getting off the point, but this is what bothers me about this episode. There's no switch... And, again, I like the episode, but there's no switch between... everyone's following Hayward to Hayward's gone mad and now we're arresting him. Like, we never get any moment of comeuppance for him. We never get S.W.O.R.D. realizing that they've been following the bad guys. Like, there's none of that emotional resonance to that decision, which is the same thing, I've said this already to you today, Matt, with the torture victims. Like, she's had thousands of people dreaming her nightmares every night, which is like, when they said that, that was a genuinely scary thing to say.
Yeah.
She's choked all these people in the street nearly to death, and only the bad person stopped her. You get all this, like, interesting, like, chewy, weird, like, horrible stuff. And then at the end, she just walks past them all, no one says anything to her, and then Monica Rambeau's like, ah, well... You know, I get it. And you're like, we've spent so much time looking at this. Like, the Dottie thing at the start of the series, where you thought Dottie was going to be a huge deal.
Yeah.
Like, people kept making out that they were going to be a thing, and then they're just not. And there's no payoff for it at all. Like, it's so strange.
Yeah, I don't know. At that point, are they just all terrified of her? I don't, like, are they just staying away?
I think this is just a case of the show spins a lot of plates, and I admire it for doing that, but it spins too many. Like... If they'd just done this whole thing of where it wasn't a mystery, if they'd kind of been fairly upfront, like, I mean, which they sort of were. On episode 4, we kind of learnt a lot about what this show was about and about the grief thing and her supposedly having bought Vision in, you know, out of sort. If it had just used that episode 4 to sort of, like, say, here's everything that's going on, I don't think it would have balanced nearly as many plates because it would have just been telling this quite heartfelt story. And yeah, there wouldn't have been all of these what feel like loose threads because they were set up as if they were mysteries when really they're not. But I think...
I did really... Yeah,
Just to carry on from what Joe was pointing about the terrifying stuff, I think what they've done with Scarlet Witch is genuinely terrific. Like, the idea of her being this apocalyptic force that is... Like, she's given... quite a lot up, weirdly, kind of like her, she's not had this conclusion to her, like, redemptive arc, and she hasn't come properly to terms with, like, the grief and stuff like that, but what she has done is taken on this kind of mantle and become what could quite possibly be a nuclear bomb for the MCU. Joe, you've mentioned to me earlier, like, she's kind of like the Phoenix for this universe now. Like, she is one of the most powerful characters in this universe. And she could be an incredible ally for kind of the Avengers and may well be the next time there is an Avengers film, be kind of a centerpiece for that film.
Yeah.
But she could also explode in everyone's face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like it. It's kind of just her version of Endgame, really, isn't it? Because all the original heroes got their chance in that film to right the wrongs, say goodbye to people, like have that choice where she'd vanished. So she hadn't had time to grieve like in those... time, so like this was basically her time to grieve, and she did kind of something similar to what all those Avengers are doing, trying to bring people back, except they were doing it, you know, with no negative repercussions. But they didn't know that until it happened, but you know, it's what ultimately they did. So you can see like why she's doing it, and it's still like, is she a villain? Like, in my mind, she's still not a villain. She's not gone fully to that dark side yet. I don't think they ever will fully plant her as the villain.
Do you not
of a
think
film?
So? See, I think they will, just because of, like, I mean, obviously I know that I kind of, like, I've read quite a lot of comics, but I feel like she is the interesting point where you build her up now over kind of a couple of phases, and then she is very, very tortured, and they didn't they didn't absolve her of that torture in the show. Like, the arc didn't finish. She, you know, while it may, there's a lot that does bring her to terms with it, but I think by not having Vision truly dead, you kind of don't bury the hatchet there, and all those kind of things. And you've essentially made her an Eldritch Terror. Like, look at her at the fucking end of it.
Mm-hmm. If there's one thing we've seen about the MCU, particularly in the latter half of it, it's that, like, tortured good people who become bad people is, like, their chosen villain. Mm-hmm. Like, they love that, you know, like, Killmonger, Baron Zemo, like, they've done this to, like, normal villains who are now, like, interesting people with interesting motivations. So I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not, I don't think they'd ever go so far as to make her the villain that gets killed at the end of something. But I do think
redeemed.
She could be placed as one. Mm-hmm. Your review, Matt, said something interesting that I hadn't considered when we watched it, which is the post-credits scene where we see her essentially doing the Doctor Strange research thing. And I took that to be, hey, this is the call forward to her meeting Doctor Strange. She's, like, we see him literally doing that pose and researching in the first Doctor Strange.
It has the Doctor Strange music there as well, doesn't it?
Oh, is that what it is? I didn't notice that.
I think in the background, yeah.
But, so we get that very, like, visual connection between those two, and I just took that to mean she's researching the Darkhold, there's going to be something to do with finding her children in probably Mephisto world, or whatever the
almost
fuck it's going to be. In the multiverse of in the multiverse of madness. But I took that to just be like she's getting shit done, whereas you took that to be an actual representation of there is Wanda and there is Scarlet Witch, which I hadn't considered as an idea, like that there will be an alter ego element here of some kind, which I kind of like the idea of spinning out a bit.
Yeah, I think there's, because I think she's intentionally made to look very intimidating in that, which I love. Kind of like, she is an intimidating character in the comics. Like, I'm sure everybody knows the House of M storyline about, like, even if you've never read it, kind of like, she basically causes genocide at one point in the Marvel Universe. So she is very dangerous, and I like that they've amped it up. I also like that scene sort of harks back to Watchmen with the idea of, you know, how Dr. Manhattan can astral project himself and could do lots of things, of which quite often one of those things will just be doing something, you know, like making tea. I think that shorthand of, like, this is someone incredibly powerful, and we know from the Dr. Manhattan story that that power is used for good by the person, but that can sometimes go very wrong. And so, like, I like
it It reminded me quite a bit as well of, like, it seemed they leave it on her, obviously, as she's searching through multiverses, I don't know, but, like, hearing her kids' voices that never actually existed, which I was wondering how they were going to deal with that. Like, were they two kids in this town that she'd taken as her own? But no, they just seemed creations. Like, it almost reminds me of the exact plot of Spider-Verse. It's pretty much what Fisk is trying to do, which is, like, search through multiverses to get his family back, which is, and I wonder, are they, and he, you know, but that's different because he's always been established as a villain. And you kind of, it's more of the opposite. He's a villain, but you understand what he's trying to do. Whereas she's a hero and you're like, don't do that. It's stupid. Like, it's weird how
and I like
the mind
that.
Works.
Like,
either
failing heroes are arguably the most interesting side of kind of like superheroes. So it's why Logan is such a great hero, because Wolverine is a, like, to fault to almost everything he does. And a lot of, I think the interesting thing is like, even though WandaVision is very, very different to any comic I've ever read, the era of Wanda and Vision in the, I'm trying to think if it was the late 70s or early 80s, but this uses an awful lot of material from that, kind of like the kids and the creation and all of that is very much there. So it's surprisingly faithful to the point of, like, White Vision is part of that storyline and all of that. So for anybody that does know their Marvel history, it's kind of like you can already see potential storylines they're setting up, which I do really like. But I kind of wish that there was a little bit more of a departure there, because I want that excitement and that unknown from the MCU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think ultimately we, as a series, thought it was great. I thought it was great. Like, it's just nice to have Marvel back first and foremost, and just, it was a new interesting spin on it, even if it didn't ultimately deliver on the weirdness it started with. I thought, like, it still developed that character. It wasn't just, ultimately, her scenario is very similar to the scenario she started with. Like, she's still alone and grieving, but it has developed it enough to suggest there's things in the future to look forward to.
Yeah. And I mean, she is going to end up with another Vision and her kids back, so it does feel a bit like she's moved on, but not necessarily in the most interestingly plotted way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's definitely done good stuff, and I'm very glad it exists, and I am glad in retrospect that it is the first MCU series, because I hope mm-hmm. the good response to it makes Marvel think, like, we can be really weird with this shit and people will take it. You know, we don't need Falcon and Winter Soldier to be, which I'm sure I'll enjoy, but it is going to be less interesting formally. Like, it's going to be a spy show, and we've seen those before. I've never seen anything like WandaVision before, and that's cool. I'm glad that it exists for that reason.
Mm-hmm. It also kind exactly. of like the, you know, a lot of the last phase of Marvel was about bringing cosmic to its bow, so it had essentially New York heroes and cosmic shit. And this was very much the thing that was like, and now we have magic. And the thing that I always really wanted from that Doctor Strange never did is magic can be really eldritch terror in the Marvel universe. Like, I want fiery tentacles coming from the bowels of hell and stuff like that. And I am hoping that kind of like now we're kind of opening this gate to this, the magic and the witches and, you know, very Salem trials and stuff like that. I'm hoping that they keep adding more sort of genres to this stable of stuff that is always fundamentally superheroes, but has something weirder and stranger to work with as a base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very good. Very good fun. Even if it does sound like we were very annoyed that last episode, you know, there's still a lot to enjoy. So there you go. Why not let us know what you thought of WandaVision? IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com. It's only 2 weeks now until Falcon and the Winter Soldier, so not much for a break, but I'm looking forward to that a lot now just because it was good to have Marvel back, like I said, and it was different Marvel, but I feel like this will just, Winter Soldier will feel like classic Marvel back.
It's almost nostalgia at this point.
I know. I want to see what Zemo's up to. I have full faith that Zemo will be very good as a villain. And I'm hoping that also has some surprises because the trailers haven't shown a lot, and I'm hoping like maybe that's just the first episode or two, so see where that goes. But yeah, looking forward to that. We've had a lot of WandaVision movies. I don't know, should we play the actual MCU sting, because that always gets me excited.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. People and then we'll do a post-credits scene nothing.
Of us being like, guys,
I've heard from Nick.
We've got to go on Podcast Unlocked.
Oh, God. We've got to sort out a goddamn electro freak. Goodbye.
Kiss at the end.
Little kiss. Ooh.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.